Ohio is home to around 11.5 million people. We're home to about 90 million chickens, more than a million beef and dairy cattle, a couple million pigs, and a bunch of sheep, goats, rabbits, and assorted other food animals. With people and critters so close to one another, the potential for problems could be big. Water quality, noise, odor, and infrastructure challenges abound. Today we are going to talk about protecting Ohioans and preserving animal agriculture on Town Hall Ohio.
This is Town Hall Ohio, home to interesting people, engaging issues, and enlightening stories. Town Hall Ohio is a production of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation, working to forge a partnership between farmers and consumers, and is supported by Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Now, here's Town Hall Ohio host, Joe Corneli.
For most Ohioans, the closest they come to livestock is when they visit the meat case at their grocery store. But for others, livestock farms are right nearby, and the potential for conflict is high. Lately, that conflict is being fueled by organizations and individuals who claim our state is not doing enough to protect us. Well, today we're going to hear mostly the responses to those complaints. I'll tell you right off the bat, this is not going to be a two-sided debate or conversation. The people who are unhappy seem to get plenty of attention in the media already. So today's show is a response to what many in agriculture feel are unfair and at times untruthful descriptions of how Ohio's livestock industry is regulated. To help us tell that story, Kevin Elder joins us. He is the chief of the Livestock Environmental Permitting Program at the Ohio Department of Agriculture. Brandon Kern is Senior Director for Policy Outreach with the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation. Both rookies. Both of you, welcome to Town Hall, Ohio.
Rookies indeed. Thanks a lot, Joe.
Well, no Sam Donaldson moments. No ambush interview here today. So, Kevin, I'm going to start with you, and Brandon, feel free to chip in. But before we start talking about are livestock farms dangerous, are we being protected, what benefits do they provide, I think there's still a lot of people that have a picture of a livestock farm as a green pasture with a few animals roaming freely. We have those in Ohio, but commercial meat production looks very different. Tell folks what it looks like and why it looks like that.
Well, basically, back in the 70s, they started changing how livestock were managed. That was because of improved genetics, feed rations. They tried to get more production out of it. When I was taught how to milk cows back in my early years, it was done by hand, and they maybe produced 4,000 pounds per year. Today, it's more like 30,000 pounds because of genetics and rations and housing. That pushed animals into tighter management and better care of the individual animals.
A lot of it for certain species, poultry and pork in particular, it's actually indoors.
That's correct. It has moved indoors because of trying to improve the ventilation, improve the climate control for the animal. It was no fun feeding sows out in the mud like it used to be. And I did that at OSU years ago.
And I get it, because a lot of people will equate whether or not their dog or cat is happy with whether or not a food animal is quote-unquote happy. But there are very good reasons why. Well, one of the things I point out when someone questions whether these animals should be inside is, well, if they weren't comfortable, they would not be producing the amount of milk that they produce or the number of eggs or meat. So the science tells us that it's not bad to have these animals operating in this kind of an environment.
When an example, the dairy cows, taking dairy cows out of an older facility into a new modern facility, the producers say they'll gain 10%, both in cow comfort and in production and feed efficiency. So it produces an opportunity for lower cost food, basically.
Yeah, I was going to say, Brandon, that's it's great that the dairyman can make a little extra profit, but you and I, it helps us when we go to Giant Eagle or Kroger's.
That's right. I mean, there are real benefits to consumers. The healthier the animal you have, the higher quality of food you're going to get. And, you know, I think these I think these facilities, a lot of time, you have these connotations of what these facilities look like if you're a consumer who hasn't seen it firsthand. But these are high technology facilities. They've got high tech ventilation systems, misting machines. They're climate controlled, so that, you know, they got heating systems which keep the animals comfortable all year round. A lot of farmers like to joke that their animals live better than they do in their climate controlled environment. So, but that all leads in the end to a better product for the consumer. So,
and these systems are called into question often. It's my contention that people are being told they should question why or not these animals should be in these kind of care systems. There are people who don't like agriculture structured the way it is, and they're not very bashful about telling their story.
Yeah, you know, I think here recently, especially, we've seen a lot of attention in the media from, you know, what all characterized as environmental activists or activists who, you know, claim to be proponents of livestock standard care or the health of the animals. But in the end, I think a lot of this boils down to motivations of not wanting consumers to consume meat and have access to meat, which is a real problem.
Kevin, one more piece about the structure of animal agriculture in Ohio today. It's better for the animals, it's better for the consumers, it's better for the livestock owners. It also helps the crop farmers in Ohio.
It definitely helps the crop farmers as far as providing markets for close by for their grain, as far as that goes, and also providing organic source of nutrients instead of having to buy commercial fertilizers. So there's some benefits and interactions with crop and livestock.
Well, and there's, you know, let me add this, too, is that there are real benefits to our overall economy, not just those producers who are raising it. But if you look at the overall estimated impact of what the livestock industry provides, and this is not just sales of meat that benefit the farmer itself, but the overall economic impact, dairy production in this state has an estimated economic impact of over $4 billion. It's about $2 billion if you look at pork production and $2.3 billion for poultry production. So providing real economic impact, you know, for our state overall and the economic health of our state, not just those who are raising the animals themselves.
Now, one other point I want to make here, and then we'll move on. I think someone could legitimately think after listening to our first 5 or 6 minutes here that, there's Big Ag Farm Bureau once again standing up for the corporate factory mega farmer. I guess what our message is, the reason we're talking in the way that we are today is that there's a lot of people that are already taking shots at that segment. But Brandon, at Ohio Farm Bureau, we're all about choice. We're not saying that you have to have a big sow confinement system to produce pork. We're also saying if you want to raise sows out on a pasture, that's fine too.
Absolutely. I mean, at Farm Bureau, we're kind of the big tent in terms of agriculture goes. So a great example, our executive vice president, his family owns an organic dairy farm in Fairfield County. But we also have plenty of members in this state who have found the need to diversify their operations. So they're going to raise row crops, and they're also going to have livestock in those operations as well. There's a place for all of that in agriculture because there are markets for all those different types of food products.
Well, we are chatting today with Brandon Kern, who's on staff at the Ohio Farm Bureau. Kevin Elder is with the Ohio Department of Agriculture. Kevin, the Livestock Environmental Permitting Program in Ohio, tell us its genesis, what its purpose is.
Well, basically in the 90s, there were environmental problems with some of the larger livestock farms, and the only regulation at that time environmentally was through a permit to install at Ohio EPA. That was decided back in the late 70s of issuing permits to install to what the Clean Water Act were classifying as large facilities. And that permit to install basically required the facilities to meet the exemption of not having a discharge. Those were never inspected or never tracked well, and there were not rules for operation or management once they were installed. and there were not inspections. So in the 90s, probably a lot of people don't remember, but we had some pretty bad large operations that were in the newspaper a lot. And one of the classics that I always remember was sitting in front of the judge in Licking County, and he said it would be a lot harder or a lot easier to levy penalties against this livestock farm if there were rules in place. And that hit home pretty good with some of the legislators in the ag community. And basically from 95 until legislation was passed in December 2000 that moved the state permitting to the Department of Agriculture and required staff and permits to install and inspection and rules and enforcement penalties in place, it basically moved the environmental side to the Department of Ag for the agricultural facilities.
Typically, Brandon, you will hear that farm groups like Farm Bureau don't want regulation. It's not that way at all. If we see a need to stop these bad actors, the farmers that are our members, they don't want a black eye.
Sure, and I think we've shown that here. As we confront Ohio's water quality challenges here in recent history, we've supported two major pieces of legislation that the state legislature has now passed into law, adding additional regulations because, we see the need to do those things. So Senate Bill 1, which regulates the application of nutrients up in the Western Lake Erie Basin, where we've seen a significant issue with water quality in terms of algal blooms in Lake Erie. Farm Bureau supported that piece of legislation. We also supported a piece of legislation, a first-in-its-kind fertilizer application certification, first-of-its-kind in the nation that we have now here in Ohio, because we know farmers will benefit from being educated about the best ways to apply those nutrients on their land. So now farmers, if you apply fertilizer in the state of Ohio or nutrients in the state of Ohio, you need to be certified, and you're going to get a great educational program that tells you what's the best practice and the best ways to do that. And that's common sense.
We're going to start describing in a little bit more detail what some of the regulations are on livestock farms in Ohio. And then I'm going to actually tell you some excerpts from newspaper clippings, complaints against the system, and allow you two to respond. But while we've got about a minute before the break here, Kevin, just give us the general description of the regulatory system in Ohio in terms of how livestock farms are watched. It's mostly based on the number of animals in a specific location.
That is correct. Ohio follows the definitions that U.S. EPA set aside in the Clean Water Act. So anything over 2,500 hogs over 55 pounds, 700 mature dairy cows, 82,000 layers, 125,000 pullets is requiring a state permit to install and a state permit to operate.
And the numbers are based generally on just how much waste they're going to produce.
They were basically set by the Congress in Washington, D.C., and roughly on the amount of manure.
I was just thinking there's some kind of a joke there between Congress and waste material, but we won't go there for now. Actually, we're going to go to a commercial break. We'll be back to talk more with Kevin Elder and Brandon Kern about livestock facility regulation in Ohio when we continue right after this. Up many newspapers in Ohio, and you will hear the charge that Ohio citizens and our environment are not being protected from the ills of livestock agriculture in Ohio. Today, our topic on Town Hall Ohio is refuting those claims. Helping us tell the story, Kevin Elder, chief of the Livestock Environmental Permitting Program at the Ohio Department of Agriculture, and Brandon Kern, senior director of policy outreach with the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation. We talked about livestock regulation being largely numbers of animal based. There's some specific terminology that gets used. CAFO, concentrated animal feeding operation. CAF, a concentrated animal feeding facility. AFO, Tell us a little bit more about the acronyms that get thrown around.
Well, the CAFO is a federal term, and generally when you're using CAFO, it is a discharging livestock facility that requires a federal NPDES permit, or non-point pollution discharge elimination system permit. That permit is issued and delegated by US EPA, and in Ohio, it is still issued by Ohio EPA. There are very few facilities that actually have a constructed discharge, like a wastewater treatment plant. Most of the permits issued by Ohio EPA, the PTIs, met the criteria of not having a discharge, so didn't require a federal NPDES permit. The state permits issued by the Department of Agriculture, the concentrated animal feeding facilities are facilities that do not have a discharge. We still regulate them more than an NPDES because an NPDES permit doesn't have siting criteria, it doesn't have groundwater protections, it doesn't have some of the mortality management and emergency response and odor minimization. An NPDES doesn't have those criteria that the state permit has.
So the bottom line is, if you're a big farm, large livestock farm, you have to get permission to build the farm, and then you are regularly checked as you have to get permission to operate the farm. Brandon, we'll come back more on this later, but probably the complaint we're hearing most often now is that a farmer will go in, and because he's evil and has ill intent, he will build a livestock farm that comes in just under the size that's going to force Kevin or the EPA to get engaged in the building and operation. They say these smaller farms are unregulated. Not so much.
They're not. I mean, that's not true. They are. Yes. So these farms have to abide by the same what we call ag pollution abatement standards as the large farms do. The only difference is you don't have to get a permit ahead of time that authorizes you to construct. But you, once you're operating, still have to abide by those same standards as the large farms do. And then if you don't, the Department of Agriculture, and Kevin could probably speak to this a little bit more, has the ability to come in and require you then to obtain a permit if you aren't abiding by those standards that have been set. So
a federal permit or an NPDES permit can be required for just about any size operation that discharges. So that's the last thing you want to do is discharge and have that kind of a permit over your head.
Well, you made the point that before we made these changes back in the 90s, there was very limited, if any, inspection. So you get this big livestock farm, and it's producing a lot of milk or eggs or pork. It's producing a lot of manure. There could be runoff from that farm. Tell me what it is your agency does in terms of keeping an eye on making sure these people comply with the law.
Basically, all of the facilities are designed to make sure that they adequately treat all of the manure on that site, that they do not have any discharges of egg wash, of milk house waste, of contaminated stormwater, of manure off of that specific site itself. So we're looking at the amount of volumes of storage they have. We look at the design and construction of that storage so we don't pollute groundwater, or so it doesn't have a tile going to a stream from the facility, and basically preventing those discharges that years ago we found out that some of the farms had a tile leading from the feedlot to the ditch. It was like having livestock in a stream at some point in time. A lot of times livestock had direct access to streams. Having some of these newer facilities prevents that.
And Brandon, doing these kind of things that state law requires, while we recognize the need for it, if you're a livestock farmer, you're starting to add substantially to cost in terms of making sure you're in compliance with the law.
That's right. I mean, there's significant overhead costs, and we've run into this. I mentioned Senate Bill 1 earlier in the show. So new regulations on when and how you can apply nutrients in the Western Lake Erie Basin. And those restrictions come into play when the soil is saturated or the ground's frozen or snow covered, or when the weather is predicting a certain amount of rainfall in the immediate future. Well, that's created even more challenges, and we're working with farmers up there to ensure they've got enough manure storage capacity to be able to comply with the law, because now you've shortened the window for the time that you can apply that manure into the ground and use it as a fertilizer. So, there's already significant infrastructure challenges, and you know, that's a prime example of adding more to it.
Kevin Elder from the Ohio Department of Agriculture, Brandon Kern from the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation. We're spending today responding to some charges from environmental organizations who would like us to believe that Ohioans are not well protected from livestock farms. We're going to continue that conversation with Kevin and Brandon right after this.
I grew up with the cows and the pigs and the goats. I grew up with the cows and the pigs and the goats. I grew up with the cows and the pigs and the goats. Where the animals are. I grew up on the farm. Where the animals are. I grew up on the farm.
Welcome back to Town Hall, Ohio, where we're talking about animal agriculture, its potential to be harmful to humans and the environment, and what the state of Ohio is doing to mitigate that potential. Helping us with the story, Kevin Elder runs the Livestock Environmental Permitting Program for the Ohio Department of Agriculture. Brandon Kern is Senior Director of Policy Outreach with the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation. Kevin, we were talking about some of the things that ODA does in terms of keeping tabs on these livestock farms. You're not the only agency that's doing that in Ohio.
That's correct. We still work closely with Ohio EPA. We work with Ohio Division of Wildlife, the various soil and water conservation districts. And basically, anytime there is a spill or we find a problem, we have communications back and forth so everybody's on the same page. We know who needs to be out there on that problem with water quality. And we do take enforcement on problems when we see it.
You hit the point there, and I said at the top of the show we were going to kind of repeat some of the complaints that we hear and let you gentlemen respond to them. Brandon, one of the biggest complaints you hear most frequent is that these rules are all great, but nobody's enforcing them. What's your response to that?
Well, you know, in Ohio, the professionals at the Department of Agriculture, and Kevin, correct me here if I'm wrong, but I think we have a much more stringent inspection requirement here in Ohio than even the federal standard. So I believe, Kevin, that it's every 6 months for a permitted facility.
Basically, we inspect the facilities according to their size and complexity, anywhere from 1 to 3 times a year, depending on it. And more often, if they're not in compliance, if they find a problem, we'll be back doing re-inspections. We'll do inspections on complaints. We do inspections on land application. US EPA recommends one inspection every 5 years. We're out there multiple times per year, not only preventing problems, but addressing issues before they cause a water quality problem.
But sometimes manure happens. Okay, so so you got all these regulations, you've got all of this inspection. Sometimes something's going to go wrong. Have you ever busted anybody?
Yeah, we busted several. The one that comes to mind that was real bad is they asked our inspector what they needed to do, how much manure they should apply. It was a critical time of year. It was risky, and he told them you can put 5,000 gallons on, and that's it. That particular outfit turned the pumps on and ran them all night. We directly turned that one over as a criminal violation to US EPA, and the penalties were $340,000+.
You know, Joe, and I think part of the reason why that's the rare occasion, okay? And that's the worst case scenario, and that's what we need a regulatory structure for. But, you know, one of the other complaints we hear a lot about is that ODA shouldn't be the one regulating. It should be Ohio EPA or US EPA, the one in charge of that.
Well, I'm glad you went there, and I'm going to let you respond. I'm going to read you from the Toledo Blade editorial. It says, in 2000, the Ohio Farm Bureau lobbied lawmakers in Columbus to drop the OEPA as a regulator of massive farms, turning that job over to the Department of Agriculture, one of the biggest proponents of agribusiness in this state. then the Blade editorial board goes on to say we need to go back to the future, back to regulation. We need the Department of Environmental Protection to protect our water.
And you know what? The reason why the situation that Kevin talked about earlier is the rare occasion is because we use it, in my opinion, is because we use the Department of Agriculture to do this permitting process. The professionals at the Department of Agriculture understand the industry. And their whole goal, and especially in this permitting process, is to work, review the plans that farmers have and how they plan to operate their farm, review that, identify potential issues, and head them off before they ever occur in the first place. And so that, you know, progressive approach, working with farmers up front to prevent those situations from ever developing when the farm's actually operating is a key to why I think we do it right in Ohio.
So if I'm going to have brain surgery, I want my brain surgeon verified and licensed by somebody who understands brain surgery. So I get your point. Kevin, I'm going to throw out another piece here just real quick before the break. This is from a quote in the Van Wert Independent newspaper. It's from Mike Ferner, who has started a group called Advocates for Clean Lake Erie. Quoting from that newspaper story, Ferner said Americans finally learned that safe levels of lead in paint and gasoline do not exist, so they banned them altogether. The same with DDT and phosphates in detergents, each time over the howls of those who profited. And then Ferner quoting here, "We will do the same with any commercial practice that threatens our life support systems," end quote. Mr. Ferner seems to be saying we should be doing away with livestock agriculture in Ohio. I assume you think that's not a great idea.
Well, that livestock agriculture provides nutrients that people want organic sources, and used properly, they do meet the needs of the crops and the people and the water itself. So we just need to make sure that everything is followed to minimize any impacts to water.
We'll be back with more of our discussion over whether or not the state of Ohio is doing an adequate job of protecting us from potential harm from livestock farms. Brandon Kern of Farm Bureau, Kevin Elder of ODA, will be back right after this.
My goal in life is to spread love around, to sprinkle it gently all over the ground. When I clean out the barn, I cleanse my heart too, while hauling manure, I'm thinking of you.
Welcome back to Town Hall, Ohio, where we are talking about livestock farming in Ohio, its potential to degrade the environment, and what the state of Ohio and farmers are doing to make sure that doesn't happen. I will repeat a disclaimer from the top of the show. Not really a two-sided discussion today. More of a position where there are a variety of editorial boards, activist groups in Ohio who are pointing fingers regularly at the farm community and frankly making statements about our regulatory regime that are untrue. And we are responding to those today. Kevin Elder is with the Ohio Department of Agriculture. Brandon Kern is with the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation. Kevin, you made a point. EPA, they're very, in terms of what Brandon was responding to, that EPA should regulate livestock farms, not the Department of Agriculture. EPA is very good at what they do, but they don't do farming.
That's correct. And a lot of the agronomic background, the specialized training in agricultural practices, that's not part of their training. They do excellent jobs at the point source treatment and designing and reviewing those. The legislature said that we should have experts in agronomics and animal design, and it's a different field than wastewater treatment. Ohio EPA regularly comes to us when they have a problem with land application of other materials because we have agronomists that understand how those materials should be applied to the land.
Another excerpt from the Toledo Blade, an editorial that they wrote recently, and I'm quoting here, "Most experts on Lake Erie, on water, and on concentrated animal feeding operations, heck, many of the remaining family farmers in the region, say this part of Ohio simply cannot absorb another factory farm or its runoff. I guess this statement or the concern in the blade, it's a fair concern. Do we have the capacity to handle these numbers of animals in Ohio? What's your response? The blade says we don't.
Well, if you look at the state as a whole, and you go back 20 years and you look at the livestock inventory we had 20 years ago and the livestock inventory that we have today, we've got in most sectors fewer animals than we did 20 years ago. I think it's every sector with the exception of maybe the poultry industry, fewer animals in the state. As to the issue, you know, with the concentration of them in certain regions of the state, well, part of this review process that we've been talking about and the permits you need to obtain in order to operate take into account what's your nutrient management plan, how are you going to use the nutrients, if you're going to be spreading that on farmland, for example, it takes into account all the agronomic requirements that you need to process those nutrients in the soil the right way. So all these things are taken into account as a part of the permitting process up front before these operations even start their procedures, their operations.
So Kevin, the blade and some of the activist groups that they think like say we can't handle more animals in Ohio. That's opinion. Have you done any science on that question?
Well, and the easiest thing to go back to is some of the joint reports. The Lake Erie Phosphorus Task Force report looked at where the nutrients were in that 4+ million acres in that basin. And 60-some percent of those nutrients were coming from commercial fertilizers. So it shows that a very small portion, less, 30-some percent, is coming from livestock, about 9% from biosolids. So there is room to replace those nutrients, commercial, imported from other countries, with organic sources also. Again, it's not a consideration of the volumes right now, but make sure they go to where they're needed and don't cause an aquatic a runoff problem and problems in the lake.
I want to jump to another question. The complaint is that manure is not regulated. The livestock farmer or the livestock farm may be, but the manure itself is not regulated. And so if a farmer gives away the manure or sells it, he or she is literally washing their hands of any responsibility.
Currently, with the laws passed last summer, anybody that takes manure from a permitted farm has to be trained, either a certified livestock manager or go through the fertilizer certification to use that material. So any manure from a permitted farm has to be used by whoever's taking it to those standards to use it properly as a replacement for commercial fertilizer.
Well, we'll be back to share a few more of the common complaints that we hear regarding Ohio's livestock regulation. We're going to hear responses to those complaints from Kevin Elder of the Department of Agriculture and Brandon Kern from Ohio Farm Bureau right after this.
Someone's been telling you, someone's been telling. Someone's been telling you, someone's been telling. Someone's been telling you, someone's been telling. And they just ain't true.
When it comes to large livestock farms in Ohio, there are a lot of stories being told about the regulatory authority of the state of Ohio, whether the rules are sufficient and whether they're being enforced. And those who are opposed to larger livestock farms will tell you they are not. Our purpose today is to counter some of those arguments. With us is Kevin Elder, who runs the Livestock Permitting Program for the Ohio Department of Agriculture. Brandon Kern in policy at the Ohio Farm Bureau. Kevin was telling us part of this to wrap up this whole concept that we hear regularly that manure, if somehow the livestock farmer sells it or gives it away, it's a horrible problem, just not the case.
Well, that for the simple reason, Joe, is that the regulation is on how you use the manure. So how you put it on the ground is what's regulated. So whether it changes hands six times in the state of Ohio, in the end, if someone is going to use it as a nutrient – the regulations on how they put that on the ground.
And the regulations designed to prevent problems, and then they are followed up on by the appropriate agency that if the law is broken, there is a penalty to be paid. Another thing that we hear pretty regularly, Kevin, that we should address, we've been talking about nutrients getting in the water, but odor is a concern, a legitimate concern for people who live out in rural areas. How do we handle that in terms of letting farmers farm, but not ruining somebody's Sunday afternoon picnic?
On the permitted farms, at least we have some siting criteria that helps minimize those odors. There are not specific regulatory levels of odor that are enforceable, but more so is in the construction, the design, and the management of the manure, and then the land application is there's practices to minimize it. And a lot of the siting criteria are considering distance and location and wind direction, and there are some minimum setbacks from nearby residences, just like there's minimum setbacks from surface waters and wells. It's not a perfect world. There are regulations that exempt odor, noise, dust of agricultural operations unless somebody is specifically creating a nuisance. They're pretty well protected in agriculture.
Regulations aside, Brandon, the farm families that you and I work with on a daily basis, they try to be good neighbors.
That's right. I mean, and there are a lot of things that farmers do to try and mitigate impacts to their neighbors. You know, we talked about the technology in these barns. So, you know, the ventilation, the manure storage capacity that they have are designed to try and mitigate and concentrate odors within the barn. But, you know, Kevin talked about setbacks. There are a lot of farmers will place, you know, their own standards on themselves about, you know, setting back these barns away from the property lines from their neighbors. And they can do things like create windbreaks. So you plant trees and things like that to be able to contain the odor in the area of the barn. So all those things are being done across the state.
And another thing I hear regularly, if you're going to do something on your home property out in the country, a graduation party, or you got family coming over, if you just talk to the farmer, more times than not, he or she is going to accommodate you as best they can.
Sure. And, you know, on the flip side, we're working with our farmers because this, you know, conversation is a two-way street. So when a farmer's considering building a facility like this, we want them to approach their neighbors and talk about how the project's going to unfold and what that's going to mean. But yeah, absolutely. Having those types of conversations, you're going to find that most farmers around the state are going to be respectful of that type of thing, and they can alter the practices that they're going to have in that facility during that time period to be accommodating to you as the neighbor.
One last point, Kevin. We said at the top of the show that this wasn't going to be an even-handed discussion. There are a lot of people that are making accusations against animal agriculture in Ohio, and our purpose today was to respond to those where we literally control the venue. If the public wants to weigh in when there's a livestock enterprise that's being considered, they've got the opportunity to do so.
That's correct. Every permit that we issue has a public comment period. It's public noticed in the paper in that county. There is access. They can receive an email for the notices in that county or notices statewide. They can call us. If they have questions, contact us.
The Ohio Department of Agriculture, just Google them. Their Livestock Environmental Permitting Program is accessible right there from the ODA homepage. And, of course, Ohio Farm Bureau, OFBF.org, access to our activities in this space as well. Kevin Elder, Chief of Livestock Environmental Permitting, Ohio Department of Agriculture. Brandon Kern, Senior Director Policy Outreach at Ohio Farm Bureau. Thanks to you guys, and thanks to everybody for tuning us in today on Town Hall Ohio.
Town Hall Ohio is a project of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation and is brought to you with the support of Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Join us again next week for Town Hall Ohio.